A Life Less Ordinary, a Panic at the Disco story featuring the pairing Spencer Smith, Brandon Urie. Written by Sunset Mog. Summary. Brendan needs a new place to live, and so does Brent's friend Spencer. The problem is, they're running out of options, and the only affordable apartment will only rent to a young professional couple. Are they desperate enough to pretend to be together? It's rain that finally pushes Brendan over the edge. Rain, and an empty fridge, and a pile of bills on the table in the kitchen that all seem to be stamped unpaid in bold red writing. Brendan's been working all week, and his job sucks, and Dave, Brendan's primary contact for weed, is on vacation, so he's stuck at home in his shitty apartment on a Friday night without even any weed to make it better. And there is rain coming through his window. I need a new place to live, he says to himself, trying to figure out how the rain is getting from the outside to the inside of his apartment when the window is supposed to be shut. The large gap around the seal seems to be the cause, and seriously, his AC unit is fucked, there's rain coming in the window, he's broke, and he hates his job. Everything fucking sucks. He calls Brent. Brent is back from college for the vacation, and he's a good guy. He's the one guy Brendan's kept in touch with from high school, which was a fairly miserable 4 years, up to and including the part where he came out to his parents and moved out of home when he was 17. His parents are pretty great, all things considered, but it's taken them 3 years to stop emailing him links to websites where stupid dudes with bad facial hair promise to cure him of his sins and turn him back to the sight of the ladies. Brendan likes ladies, he just doesn't want to have sex with them, which is totally fine, because half the world is made up of men, and Brendan would like to have sex with them instead. Not all of them, obviously, but one or two of them would be nice. Anyway, the point is, he's been in this apartment since he was 17, and it sucked when he was in high school, and it sucks even more now he's almost 21 and spending his days at the bookstore in the mall, straightening romance novels and trying not to get stuck working the register with the broken drawer, the one that keeps shooting out and hitting him in the stomach every time he presses the cash key. I need a new apartment, man, Brendan says as soon as Brent picks up the phone. There is rain in my apartment. I need the rain to be outside. Dude, Brent says, and he sounds fucked up, which is unfair. Brendan wants to be fucked up. Dude, come over and get fucked up. Okay, Brendan says, and grabs his jacket and the umbrella with the giant frog eyes stuck on top that some kind customer left in the erotic fiction aisle and didn't come back to claim. Most of Brendan's sunglasses and umbrellas and gloves and scarves and hats come from the lost property closet in the bookstore. There's a single turquoise high-heeled shoe on the top of his fridge. It had clearly never been worn, and Brendan keeps his pens in it. Who loses a single new shoe in a bookstore and doesn't come back for it? I'm coming over. Brent's basement is kind of awesome, Brendan thinks, a couple of hours later. He's sprawled on the couch, a slice of pizza sitting on his chest, and he's much happier now that he's not at home in his apartment, watching the rain magically arrive on the wrong side of the window. I need a new apartment, Brendan says, for approximately the 50th time. I know, Brent says, from where he's lying on the floor by the TV. You said. How am I going to find the money for a new place? Brendan complains, breathing a little jerkily so he can watch the pizza slice on his chest go up and down. I have no money. You need a roommate, Brent says. It'll be cheaper. Hey, my friend Spencer's looking for a place. Brendan makes a face. He tried out for Brent's friend Spencer and Ryan's band in high school, but he hadn't made the cut, and a while later the band had split up when Ryan went off to college anyway. Yeah, no, Brendan says. Beggars can't be choosers, Brent says solidly, sounding just like his mom. I'll call him. He won't want to live with me, Brendan says, taking a bite of pizza, but whatever, call him. It turns out Spencer does want to live with him. Well, he probably doesn't, but he's desperate, so he turns up at Brent's place with a bag of slightly stale donut holes and some more weed. They're selling my apartment block, Spencer says, stealing a piece of pizza. Brendan had been saving that piece of pizza. It had tons of pineapple on it, and Brendan loves pineapple on pizza. Ugh. Pineapple, Spencer says, and starts to pick it off and drop it in the pizza box. Brendan picks it up and eats it. I need to move out by, like, next Friday. There is rain in my apartment, Brendan says miserably. Huh, Spencer says. You want to look for a place? My job is shitty, and I'm broke, and my parents say I can't move home unless I go back to college, and I fucking hated college. I like getting fucked up, Brendan says. My job's shitty, too. Awesome, Spencer says. Let's do this. The first 8 places are really shitty, and half of them look like rain being on the wrong side of the window is the least of their worries. The situation is getting pretty desperate, and then Brent emails them both an advert that says, room available to rent, in converted house, suitable for young professional couple. Contact Marcia. No cobras allowed. Previous applicants don't apply again. The rent is really reasonable. No cobras allowed, Brendan says. We're going to die. What is this place? We're going to be homeless if we don't, Spencer says, from where he's reading the backs of the Harlequin novels in Brendan's bookstore. Why did you give up your place before we'd found somewhere to move? Because I can't afford to pay rent on 2 places, Brendan says, straightening the Regency romance novels, even though he's already straightened them once this hour. I'll call Marcia, Spencer says. I'll tell her that neither of us have any cobras. Slight problem, Brendan says, ignoring the frown his manager is giving him. We're not a young professional couple. No, Spencer says, but we are desperate, and desperate people can pretend to be anything. Huh, Brendan says. Okay. Marcia answers the door, holding a bottle of wine, a carton of cigarettes, a lit cigar, and wearing a housecoat. Hi, Brendan says, grabbing Spencer's hand, since Spencer is trying to edge away. We're here about the apartment. You're just in time, Marcia says. Cigarette? Wine? Sure, Brendan says. We're a young professional couple. In need of rooms, Spencer adds, kicking Brendan in the ankle. And at this point, it's important to note that neither of us have any cobras. Marcia looks confused. That's nice, she says. Come in and share the wine with me. Spencer blinks. Okay, he says, and follows her inside. The apartment is really nice. Well, really nice on a scale that includes Brendan's current place and the either other shitty apartments they'd seen in the last week. This one has a bedroom, a bathroom, a tiny kitchen, and a living room space that totally has room for Brendan's guitars and Spencer's drum kit. The lack of a second bedroom is kind of a problem, but not one that Brendan's going to think too much about. He is desperate, and he needs to live somewhere, and the rent on this place is actually the same amount as the apartment he's currently living in, so sharing all the bills will make him actually rich. He could buy a Wii. They share Marcia's wine, and Brendan smokes more than he usually does, and then they watch Marcia have a very loud fight with her teenage daughter, and then she takes their cash and gives them the door keys, and, well, that seemed a lot easier than it should have been. It seems easy until they realize that Marcia has a key to their rooms, and that now they've shared her wine, they're supposed to be best friends. Huh, Spencer says. Let's fix a bolt. We can't do that, Brendan says, dragging in 3 trash bags of his clothes from the U-Haul and dumping them on the floor by the window. She's lonely. She's weird, Spencer says in a low voice. And why did you buy a futon? We're sharing a futon. What the shit? Ah, yes. Brendan hadn't exactly given much thought to what pretending to be a young professional couple is actually going to entail, but what it will definitely entail is sharing a bed. With Spencer. Spencer, who is hot in a flawless, totally objective kind of a way, and is also hot in a Brendan goes weak at the knees when he smiles kind of a way, too. I got it from a garage sale, Brendan says. I was 17 and furnitureless. Stop complaining. You don't even have a bed. At least I have a new mattress for it. By new, he means 2 years old and kind of saggy, but at least it had been new. He'd used all his parents' Christmas money to get it, and it was his favorite purchase ever. My place was furnished, Spencer says, whose sole contribution to their shared furniture was the shabby old computer desk and chair, complete with shabby old computer, a toaster oven, a coffee machine, and, bizarrely, a juicer. Do you juice? Brendan asks. Shut up, Spencer says. I like to cook. Yes, I can tell, Brendan says, emptying a grocery sack of mismatched cutlery and wooden spoons into a drawer. Shut up, Spencer says, but there's no bite to it. We have two televisions. We can put one in the bedroom, Brendan says. We can watch TV in bed. Awesome, Spencer says, a little awkwardly, and disappears outside to get another trash bag full of one or other of their belongings. So, Brendan says a few hours later, flopping down on his saggy couch, we're really doing this then? Looks like it, Spencer says, cracking open a couple of beers. He holds one out to Brendan. To us, Brendan says, and wonders if either of them have actually thought about what they're doing for the sake of an apartment that has four walls and a roof and hopefully keeps the rain on the outside. They're taking up sharing a bed to keep their rent cheaper. Is this going to be weird? I had a roommate at college, Spencer says, shrugging. No weirder than that. You weren't sharing a bed with your roommate at college, Brendan points out. He waits a beat. You weren't, were you? No, Spencer says, shaking his head. Not my type at all. He was a total fucking dick anyway, so even if he had been hot, I still wouldn't have had sex with him. Okay, Brendan says. Why did you leave college? It's the question that's been bugging him for a while, since he's pretty sure that Spencer is a smart guy, and Brendan would probably have loved to have gone to college, and not spent the year he was 18 making smoothies instead. Dunno, Spencer says, shrugging. Well, yeah, I do know. I hated it. I missed my mom, and I thought it was going to be great because I was in the same place Ryan was, but Ryan just hung out with all these intellectual guys who talked about books and shit, and I just wanted to get fucked up and hang out. I was going to be an accountant, can you believe it? I fucking hate accountants. All accountants? Brendan says. No, Spencer says after a moment. Just the one I was going to become. He shrugs. I don't know. I got kind of depressed. It was pretty lonely. That sucks, Brendan says. He knows what lonely feels like. Did you make any friends? A few, Spencer says. Nobody I keep in touch with. Maybe it was just the wrong major, or the wrong college, or the wrong time, or whatever, Brendan says. Maybe, Spencer says. My mom and dad still don't get it. They're still mad I dropped out. Think I've ruined my life. Stupid that I came back because I missed them, and they won't let me live at home again, right? They think that if they just hold out a while longer, I'm going to go back and magically love it. I'm sorry, Brendan says, and means it. His parents won't let him home again either. Well, they might. Brendan hasn't asked, and they haven't offered. They get on now, and he talks to them pretty regularly, but there are some holes in their relationship, things they talk around and don't go near, and Brendan's sexuality and him moving out when he was 17 are two of those subjects. It's fine, Spencer says, but Brendan can tell a lie when he hears one. He tells enough himself. How about your job? Brendan asks. He knows Spencer works in a call center by the mall. He's seen more of Spencer in the last 2 weeks than he ever has before, because Spencer drops in to see him in his lunch hour and hangs around after work so they could figure out moving and whatever. Brendan's always secretly had a love-hate relationship with Spencer, because Spencer was the first guy that Brendan ever had a love-at-first-sight ridiculous crush on. But then Spencer had come out to tell him that he wasn't in the band, and that had been that. Spencer had crushed all of Brendan's teenage dreams. Stupid. Turns out they hadn't been looking for someone who could actually sing. It sucks, Spencer says. Maybe you should look for a new one. Maybe, Brendan says. Come work in the bookstore with me. They're hiring. Maybe, Spencer says. You want some chips? I think I had some in that box I brought from the old place. Sure, Brendan says, and they put a DVD in and watched the first two Back to the Future movies back to back. Sharing a bed is weird. Brendan never really shared a bed. He's had sex, but he's never been in a relationship, and Spencer's the only person he's ever just slept beside. He thinks Spencer's as awkward as he is, both of them taking it in turns to slip into the bathroom to get ready for bed. Brendan stares up at the ceiling and blinks. He's suddenly very much wide awake. So, Spencer says, this is weird, right? Just think, Brendan says, we are going to be so rich at the end of the month with all this money we're saving. We are going to have tons of money left over. What are you going to buy? Nectarines, Spencer says quickly. I fucking love nectarines. And a knife. A good knife. I really love cooking. Brendan snorts. I'm gonna buy new pillows, he says. His are floppy and thin, and Brendan loves pillows. And less ramen. I'm tired of ramen. Let's have ramen for 2 days a week instead of four, Spencer says. Heaven. He grins, letting out a hiss of breath in the darkness. Scandalous decadence, Brendan agrees. What are we going to have instead? I'll cook, Spencer says. I make awesome spaghetti sauce. I love spaghetti sauce, Brendan says. Me too, Spencer agrees, and when Brendan finally does fall asleep, it's to the sound of Spencer telling him his recipe. Living together actually works. Marsha lets herself in sometimes, but she brings wine and cigarettes and stays to watch movies, so even though she's kind of a crazy lady, Brendan's glad of the company. He's been alone for so long that having Spencer and Marsha around is actually kind of a relief. Brendan thinks that Spencer and Marsha have been lonely too, so even though Spencer grumbles about their landlady having a key to their place, he never tells her to get out. He even makes her dinner sometimes, and in return, she brings pudding cups that remind Brendan of being a kid again. Good as his word, Brendan brings Spencer an application from the bookstore, and Spencer fills it in and gives it to Brendan to give to his supervisor, and then, 3 weeks later, Spencer starts working there. He works downstairs in the nonfiction section, whereas Brendan is upstairs in fiction, specifically romance and genre fiction, but Brendan mostly hangs out in the romance section. And everything's great until a couple of weeks later, when some guy from the stockroom that Brendan doesn't even know that well comes up and asks if Spencer's his boyfriend. Brendan says, since he is in fact part of a duplicitous young professional couple, but he wasn't sure the lie extended to their place of work. Until he spies Marsha over by the staircase, talking to Spencer and some other guy who works on Spencer's floor, and Brendan's left nodding and saying, yes, Spencer's my boyfriend, as Marsha waves at him and beckons him over. So there's that. You don't have to hide it, you know, the guy from the stockroom says, one day when their break times coincide. Brendan says, what? You and Spencer, the guy says. Brendan peers at his name badge, Martin. This is an inclusive workplace, he goes on. You two have been keeping it on the quiet, I can tell. And I'm the LGBT representative for the whole mall, you know. And I just wanted to tell you that you don't have to hide. You should come to one of our meetings. Brendan says, since he lost the thread of this conversation a while ago, right about the time when it turned out that as well as pretending to Marsha that they shared a bedroom because there was some kind of sexing love going on, now they had to pretend at work, too. Sure? Awesome, Martin says. Come along on Tuesday. Adrian from the Hallmark store is going to give a talk on inclusivity and greeting cards. Awesome, Brendan echoes weakly, since the warm glow that he gets in his stomach every time he gets to pretend that Spencer's in love with him is somewhat marred by having to sit through a lecture on inclusivity in greeting cards. Yeah, the way he felt about Spencer's general all-around hotness might possibly be sliding into that other territory, the one where Brendan started dreaming about co-parenting kittens and sharing kitchenware and holding hands at Pride. It is maybe a thing. Martin tells me we're going to an LGBT meeting about greeting cards, Spencer says, coming home at the end of his shift. Brendan's been home a couple of hours, and he's noodling about on his guitar, socked feet hanging off the end of the couch. He cornered me, Brendan maintains. Uh-huh, Spencer says. I guess it might be fun, though. I guess, Brendan says, but he remains unconvinced. Have you eaten? Spencer asks. I got stuff. I like stuff, Brendan says. Good, Spencer says. I'll cook. My parents want to meet you, Spencer says on Sunday, dropping his phone down onto the couch. Brendan plays a discordant chord on the guitar. What? He says. You're my roommate, Spencer says. They want to meet you. Huh, Brendan says. When? Spencer says. They're having a barbecue tonight? Brendan thinks about the ramen in their cupboards because it isn't grocery day until Wednesday. Spencer's obviously thinking the same thing. Sure, he says. Do we have to pretend to them too? Spencer makes a face. Please no, he says, which is all very well until they realize that they do not, in fact, own a car between them, and Spencer's mom has to come and pick them up, and then of course she demands to see around their place, and there's no way that either of them can hide the fact that theirs is a one-futon family. "Well," she says, standing in the doorway to Brendan and Spencer's room, "this is new." Spencer says, "See? They're my young professional couple," Marcia says from the doorway. She's wearing a kimono as a robe and smoking a cigar. Brendan hides behind Spencer to try and hide the fact that he's giggling. "I'm Spencer's mother," Spencer's mom says, frowning. "I work at a doctor's office. Did you know passive smoking is dangerous?" "That's a conspiracy by the government," Marcia says. "I have some rum upstairs. Who wants rum?" "We're going to a barbecue," Spencer says apologetically, which is approximately the same time as Marcia says, "I'll get my coat. And the rum." This does not, unfortunately, leave much opportunity for Spencer to explain to his family that his young professional couple relationship with Brendan is anything other than real. So he and Brendan spend the evening making up lies about how they got together, each one more ridiculous than the last. By the time they've created a getting-together story that involves salsa lessons, Brendan's great and abiding love for Spencer's juicing skills, and moonlit walks around lakes talking about philosophy, Spencer's mom is starting to look like she walked into a parallel universe, and Marcia is watching them with stars in her eyes. "Love's dead to me," she says over the rum. "I made bad choices. But these two," she says, hooking her hand into Spencer's mom's elbow. Brendan has to squeeze Spencer's hand to keep from laughing. "These two are just going to make it, I can tell." "What gave it away?" Spencer's mom asks, raising an eyebrow at Spencer. "Their combined love of juicing?" "Who doesn't love a juicer?" Spencer says. "Exactly," Brendan agrees, trying to keep a straight face. He secretly loves pretending that he and Spencer are a couple. Spencer's mom says. "Maybe you could go back to college, Spencer, and do some juicing for actual credits." "Mom," Spencer complains. "I'm just saying," she says, "you need a future." "Who needs a future if you have love?" Marcia says loudly. "You see," Spencer's mom says meaningfully, "you need an education." "Mom," Spencer says, "I hated college. I keep telling you that." "He did," Brendan agrees. "He's had a few beers, too. He was lonely. Now he's not lonely." Spencer meets his gaze for a moment, and Brendan suddenly has difficulty swallowing, because Spencer's eyes are bright and clear, and there's something measured there, too, something that makes Brendan's fingers twitch and his stomach flip over. "Yeah," Spencer says, still staring at him. "Now I'm not lonely." It's the drink talking, or Marcia's infectious craziness, but whatever. Brendan can't look away. "Oh," Marcia says, elbowing Spencer's mom, "you think they're going to get married? You'd be the mother of the bride." Brendan snorts at the look on Spencer's face at being called the bride. "Do we both get to be brides?" he asks. "I'd look pretty awesome in a big floofy wedding dress." "I want to wear the dress," Spencer says, faking a pout. "You never let me wear the dress." "Boys," Spencer's mom says, "you're annoying your dad." "He's inside," Spencer says. "He can't even hear us." "Shut up anyway," his mom says, and Brendan grins, imagining Spencer in a wedding dress. "That could have gone worse," Spencer muses a few hours later. They're watching Family Guy in bed and playing cards. "I like the bit where Marcia sang Everlasting Love in the style of Martha Stewart," Brendan says. "I didn't even know that was the style." "It is now," Spencer says. "Hey, you think we could get her to be our wedding singer on our wedding day?" "Sure," Brendan says without thinking. "She could compere, too, complete with cigar and housecoat. It'd be unique. Adrian from Hallmark could come and give a speech about the inclusivity of gay wedding cards," Spencer suggests. "There better be a lot of beer at our wedding," Brendan says. "Well," Spencer says, "obviously. So that's good, anyway." Christmas is what fucks them up. Christmas, and a fuckton of eggnog, and stupid fucking mistletoe in the break room at work, and the staff Christmas party, and a fucking conga line. Meggie and Paul from the general fiction section get it together approximately 11 minutes after the eggnog starts flowing, which is approximately 4 years and 11 months after they really should have gotten together, according to the bookstore's longest-serving staff members. Mistletoe is procured, and all of a sudden there are people clapping and chanting, and apparently all that anyone has ever wanted from life is Maggie and Paul to start kissing at the staff Christmas party. Even Brendan is accidentally infected with the one and only aim in life of seeing Maggie and Paul kiss, and he finds himself clapping along with everyone else as Paul lands a wet, noisy kiss on Maggie under a branch of wilting mistletoe. So, of course, that's when Martin says loudly, "Maggie and Paul aren't our only staff couple, though, are they? And we're an equal opportunities workplace, aren't we?" If Brendan had had any sense, and maybe about 4 glasses less eggnog, then he would have scarpered and hidden in the bathroom until the conga line started. But unfortunately, he is hemmed in by the buffet table and Janet from the cash office, so all he gets to do is see his look of embarrassed horror reflected on Spencer's face across the circle, as Martin looks reprovingly at everyone for only appreciating Maggie and Paul's Christmas making out. They, however, have disappeared to the bathroom, obviously for a spot of pre-Christmas meal discussion of serious matters, and not to make out without everyone else watching them. "No way," Brendan says, firmly, over a smattering of confused catcalls. He has shared a bed with Spencer for 4 months now, and shared grocery shopping and playing cards in bed, and attended family barbecues, and suffered drunken landladies. But there has been no kissing. There has been nothing but the fake young professional couple front that they've put on for Marcia, and now for the bookstore, and it isn't like Brendan doesn't want to kiss Spencer, because he does. Oh God, he really does. But he is aware that they are pretending. He knows if he has to kiss Spencer now, in front of all of these people, that he won't be pretending. Not even a little bit. Not even at all. He'll be doing it because Spencer is handsome and hot and accidentally his best friend, and because Spencer made it so that he isn't lonely anymore, and because he's in love with them in a real want-this-to-last kind of way. He'll be doing it because he wants to. He doesn't want to kiss Spencer like this. He doesn't want Spencer not to want Brendan the way that Brendan wants him. "No way," Brendan says, putting his hands up, even though Spencer's taken a step forward, rolling his eyes. "Spencer and me, we're no one's Christmas show. You will have to make your own entertainment." He doesn't meet Spencer's gaze. Later on, when the eggnog's finished and Brendan turns around to find Spencer, he's not there, and Brendan finds a message on his phone. "Gone home. Couldn't find you to tell you. See you later." Brendan feels a little bit like he's been punched in the chest, and he can't figure out why. When Brendan gets home, Spencer is pretending to be asleep, curled up in their blankets on the futon. His shoulders are taut, and he's not asleep, no matter how much he's trying to make Brendan believe that he is. "You're not asleep," Brendan says. "How come you left?" "Go away," Spencer says, without moving. "You woke me up." "I can't have woken you up," Brendan says, "because you weren't asleep." "Go away," Spencer says. "I don't want to talk to you." "That's not very nice," Brendan says. "What did I do?" "Nothing. I'm going to sleep." "Fine," Brendan says. "So you won't want any of the pizza I brought home then?" Spencer rolls over. "You brought pizza?" "With extra pineapple," Brendan says. Spencer makes a face. "Evil," he says. "Says the guy who left me at the Christmas party," Brendan says easily, shucking off his jeans and burrowing into a shirt and a hoodie so he can sit up in bed. "Move, Spence. Fuck, you're taking up the whole bed." "Seriously," Spencer says. "I'm going to kick you in a minute." His shoulders are still tense. "Tell Brendan what's wrong," Brendan says in his most annoying voice. Spencer just makes a noise that sounds like a growl and buries his face in his hands. "I am in a bad mood, okay? Really, stop teasing me. It's going to make me mad." "Was it the eggnog? Does eggnog make you a bad drunk?" "You make me a bad drunk," Spencer says, aggravated. "Fuck, Brendan, I hate Christmas parties." "Huh," Brendan says. "Do you want to watch TV?" He feels like Spencer isn't mad because he hates Christmas parties. This stems from the fucking kiss that wasn't, and seriously, Brendan has a ton of residual hatred for Martin right now, for screwing things up for him and Spencer. They've never fought before, not really. Over Guitar Hero and doing the dishes, and whose laundry was whose. Not that it mattered, not really. It all went in one bag and in one machine, but whatever. Spencer shrugs. I guess, he says, and Brennan flicks through the channels until he finds a canned laughter track. And then he stops channel surfing and starts eating pizza. Do you wish I'd kiss you? Is that it? Brennan asks after a couple minutes. Did I screw up our young professional couple thing? Are you mad at me? No, Spencer says. It's not... I don't know. It's stupid. I'm stupid. Brendan bumps his elbow into Spencer's. It's not stupid. You're not stupid. Much. I don't know, okay, Spencer says. I just... For a moment, I forgot we were pretending, that's all. And then I felt stupid, and I came home, okay? That's what happened. Oh, Brendan says, and looks down at his pizza. I'm going to sleep, Spencer says, when Brendan doesn't say anything. He switches off the lamp and the TV and leaves Brendan in the dark, clutching a pizza box and staring at nothing. Oh, Brendan thinks, and doesn't say anything. Brendan wakes Spencer up by tapping his nose with a piece of cold pizza. Spencer wakes up by punching Brendan in the side. What the fuck are you doing? He says, sitting up in bed. Waking you up, Brendan says. I've got to ask you something. Who wakes someone up by hitting them with pizza? Spencer says, what the fuck? Do you want some? Brendan says, passing Spencer the pizza box. He'd eaten most of the pizza in the dark, but there's still a couple of slices left, and he knows Spencer likes cold pizza. No, Spencer says, rubbing his eyes. What time is it? Don't know, Brendan says helpfully. They don't actually have an alarm clock, and Brendan's phone is still in the pocket of his jeans over the other side of the room. Are you sure you don't want any? I saved you some. Okay, Spencer says, after a moment. I'm not forgiving you for waking me up, though. Will you forgive me for not kissing you at the Christmas party? Brendan says in a rush. I'd kind of prefer you forgive me for that. Spencer stills in the darkness. What? He says softly. Am I getting this wrong? Brendan asks. You wanted me to kiss you, right? Spencer doesn't say anything. Because, okay, I really wanted to kiss you. I mean... I want to kiss you all the time, I didn't want to kiss you in front of all those people I don't care about, and then have to figure out you were only pretending so we can keep this place. Brendan, Spencer says. Brendan, shut up. I got this wrong, Brendan says in a low voice. He thinks he needs to go hide out in the bathroom or something. Maybe he can sleep on the couch. It's only tiny, but he can fold up small. No, Spencer says. No, you didn't get this wrong, I don't know what to say. Oh, Brendan says. He feels tight inside, like he's been twisted up into too small a knot, and he can't breathe. Can we be, clear about what we want? Because I'm pretty sure that I'm confused, and this is something I don't want to be confused about. You're someone I don't want to be confused about. Yeah, Spencer says. Why didn't I get into your band? Brendan asks out of nowhere. He's always wondered. When we were kids... I don't know, it's kind of... I really wanted to be in your band. Spencer shrugs. I thought you were hot, he says. That fucked me up. There was some stuff going on in my head that I didn't want to deal with, and you were like... You made me breathless. Ryan thought you were a better musician than he was, and I don't know, it was his band. He wasn't sure, but he would have said yes, I think. I was the one who was trying to put off my huge gay freakout. Oh, Brendan says, in a small voice. I kind of wish I'd had the guts to have my big freak out then. Things might have been different. Maybe. Spencer says, are you going to punch me if I tell you I think I might be in love with you? Brendan's breath hitches. No, he says. I think maybe I'm just going to kiss you, though. He pushes the pizza box off the side of the futon. They can find the pizza slices in the morning. Okay, Spencer says. Yeah, that would be... Okay. Yeah, Brendan says, and it's dark, but he's used to the dark. He's been sitting in it for over an hour, just thinking, building up the courage to wake Spencer up and tell him he's in love with him, and he wants their fake young professional couple to be real. Brendan reaches out and touches Spencer's cheek. Spencer hisses in a breath and closes his hand around Brendan's wrist. Brendan isn't sure who moves first, but then Spencer's hands are on his face, and the covers are down around Brendan's waist, and he's kissing Spencer, and Spencer's kissing him back. It's vaguely off-center and kind of weird and pizza-flavored, but Brendan likes pizza, and he loves Spencer, and he's in love with what they're doing right now. So he slides his hands into Spencer's hair and shifts so that he's kneeling up, Spencer arching up against him. When Spencer's hands slip under Brendan's hoodie and curl into the hollow of his back, Brendan whimpers, pressing himself even closer to Spencer's chest. He's tired, and it's almost Christmas, and they have to work in the morning, but Brendan doesn't care. "Is this?" he asks. "Are we doing this? For real? You and me?" "Nobody else hits me in the face with cold pizza," Spencer says, rubbing his cheek against Brendan's shoulder. "Dude," Brendan says, "that's like love in some languages." "It's love in this language," Spencer says, mouth pressing to Brendan's jaw. Brendan lets out a breath, his heart's beating fit to burst. "I'm just," he says, "I want to hit you in the face with pizza forever, is what I'm saying." "Well," Spencer says, "that's the kind of offer one half of a young professional couple just can't turn down." "Awesome," Brendan says, breathlessly, and kisses Spencer again. Epilogue. "I brought wine," Marcia says, pushing open their front door. "Oh, Christ," she says, because Brendan and Spencer are naked and kind of in the middle of something. "I'll come back in a while," Brendan snorts, hiding his face in Spencer's shoulder. "Fuck," he says, once the door is closed behind her. "Now she's seen us both naked. You think she'll start knocking before she walks in now?" Spencer slides his hand over Brendan's ass, tugging him closer. Sex on their tiny couch is a challenge, but one they're both willing to work towards. "I think she'll stop knocking for good," he says, mouth against Brendan's. "I would if I were her." "You can see me naked any time," Brendan says, letting Spencer kiss his way along Brendan's jaw. "That's kind of the deal. You don't have to walk in unannounced." "Best deal ever," Spencer says, and tugs Brendan down onto the cushions. "Now, shut up and let me suck your dick." "Okay," Brendan says, and does. Thank you for listening, and thank you to Sunset Mog for writing a lovely story and for giving Blanket permission to record her stories. This was recorded for Bandom Holidays 2014 as a gift to Wench Pixie. The original text can be found at archiveofourown.org/works/237254. Again, thank you for listening, and happy holidays.